Добро пожаловать в Дэвид Ли Роф. Будьте готовы быть испачканным грязью, быть пристыженным и устыдиться того, что вы еще живы. Welcome to David Lee Roth. Prepare to feel filthy, ashamed, and completely alive.
Prepare to feel really, really educated. I got a very special guest. Is he on the phone there? Do we have our special guest on the phone there? His name is Josh Tickle. He's an energy expert. He's a best-selling author, and his new book is called Biodiesel America. We've been talking about this here. I started bringing up when we talk about Iraq and we talk about the Mideast and everything, we start to share about the fuel problems that we have here in the United States, and I would keep invoking Willie Nelson's soybean burning tour bus. I don't know if this actually exists exactly as I describe it here, but if it does, I want to find out how I get a soybean wristwatch. I want to get a soybean flat screen. I want some soybean driven Timberlands. The future is getting brighter every Red Bull that I'm pouring in me here, and I have Josh Tickle. He's on the phone, and he's wrote the bestseller From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank. Go ahead and put him on there, Hutch. Josh, are you on?
Yes. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Josh. Thanks for joining us here.
Well, thanks for having me. You know, it's funny you mentioned Willie Nelson. I was with Willie yesterday and his soybean bus.
And please explain to me, what is the soybean bus? I know I've got this impossibly mistaken here. Explain to me what this is.
Well, it's not just a bus that you put soybeans in and it goes down the road, but it's almost as good. Willie Nelson's bus, like many vehicles in America, is now running on a fuel called biodiesel that's made from soybean oil. Now, that's the same oil that you cook with, and I just noticed you had a little commercial on there for KY jelly. You know, this is the same oil that's used in a lot of lubricants.
Oh, so you can put KY jelly in the car as opposed to use the car in order to improve your love life and then use the KY jelly.
Yes, and I can tell you from firsthand experience it works.
Outstanding. Now, how is biodiesel made exactly? How can I make this? How does this work?
Biodiesel, if you can make a margarita, let's back up. Can you make a margarita?
Oh, boy, did you come to the right store.
Then you can make biodiesel.
Okay, how does this go?
Biodiesel is a combination of vegetable oil, a very simple alcohol, usually methanol or ethanol, and a catalyst. We use drain cleaner, lye.
This is amazing. So are you talking about what we use to manufacture fried chicken will actually operate the Maserati now?
Absolutely. I drove 2 years in a van across the country, which I made fuel from used cooking oil from Kentucky Fried Chicken.
So instead of going from gas station to gas station, you actually went from McDonald's to Kentucky Fried to Burger King to Carl's and then back to Kentucky Fried, correct?
I turned the grease dumpsters of America into a network of low-cost gas stations.
Marvelous. Now the environmentalists are going to give up and support you, and here comes the people for animal rights. Now you're encouraging all the chickens for Kentucky Fried. How well does this work? Can you do 60 miles an hour in an automobile powered by this?
Well, my 2002 Golf, my Volkswagen's, never had anything but biodiesel in it, and the top speed that I took that thing up to is 135, and there was still plenty of pedal.
Ouch. And how long can you operate on a full tank of chicken?
Well, the Volkswagen that I'm driving right now gets 47 miles per gallon, so I can go about 500, 600 miles on a tank.
At approximately what kind of a ceiling speed? At what kind of a general cruising speed would you be maintaining if you can go that far?
In L.A., I drive 80, 85.
Amazing. This is stunning stuff. Did you build your first car? Okay, I'm talking to Josh Tickle, and he is the author of Biodiesel America, and we're talking about, I told you that we would get him in here, and talking about fuel resources and some of the options that we may actually have. Josh, did you actually manufacture this first biodiesel engine yourself?
No, the amazing thing about biodiesel is Rudolf Diesel actually designed the diesel engine over 100 years ago to run on vegetable, and we tell the incredible story of Rudolf Diesel and his mysterious death in my book.
What kind of a mysterious death? You mean somebody from another corporation may have conspired and the actual diagnosis was death from parked cars?
Yes. Let me put it to you this way. His body was found floating in the English Channel.
Uh-oh, right next to Jimmy Hoffa's, I'm guessing. Okay, so you're up against corporate America to a great degree. This ain't exactly headlines, but this is the first time we're hearing about somebody with an actual option conspiring to make a benefit here, to make a contribution, and you're saying you're already running into obstacles with this?
Well, of course. I mean, you've got the three big-headed monster. You've got the government, the oil companies, and the auto companies. The only thing is, they may not want to change, but they have to change, so they're doing it reluctantly. The amazing thing is the biggest purchaser of biodiesel in America is the Navy.
Whoa, what is the Navy using it for?
They're using it for all of their non-tactical vehicles, and they're starting to test it in their ships.
Okay, well, these are the people who have to stretch the dollar the most and get the fewest dollars. Okay, I understand that. Now, can biodiesel and other alternative fuels replace petroleum or gas as we know it on a real basis, on a permanent basis? Or is this a stopgap measure?
No, this is absolutely a potential replacement. We could be 100% fossil fuel free in the United States in the near-term future if we embrace these new technologies. Europe's already moving in that direction. They've got 1,800 pumps that serve biodiesel at the pump. They base every contract on the fact that they are going to get oil independent.
And Europe bases its entire diet on fried foods. This is a pairing made in heaven. Amazing. I'm talking to Josh Tickle. He's the author of the bestseller From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank. He took a biodiesel-powered Winnebago and drove across the country using fuel made from grease from fast food restaurants. This is an amazing story. Is the world's oil supply really running out, and can they prove that? Or is it is this an option that they're using to raise prices? Are we really running out of fuel here, Josh?
We don't talk about running out of fuel. What we talk about is peak oil. And peak oil essentially means we've crested up to the top of the peak of production, and we're now on the downslope. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to run out of every drop of oil. What it means is that every bit of oil that's produced from now onward becomes more valuable because demand worldwide now exceeds supply. So we were once the leaders in that industry, but now we're in the same boat with China and India and Japan and everyone else. And they have money, too, and they have lots of people who need lots of oil. So all of a sudden, America is not so much in a power position to gain the oil we want.
Okay, is this stuff safe for public use? Okay, anytime we get a miracle drug that's going to help me lose 20 pounds but still enables me to eat cheeseburgers for breakfast, it turns out it gives me diarrhea. I understand that this works beautifully in the engine and that the engine can replace what's going on today at some point in the future, but is there a downside to this? Are there any kind of medical things that come from a biodiesel engine?
Well, the health effects are much lower with biodiesel than with diesel fuel or gasoline. It's non-toxic. It's biodegradable. I have personally drank biodiesel.
So have I, but I don't admit it in public.
that
case is still in court, so let's just move on.
The downside, to answer your question, is that biodiesel doesn't perform as well as regular fuels in cold temperature. So it tends to gel a bit in cold temperature. We circumnavigate that problem by sometimes mixing it with diesel fuel or installing fuel tank heaters. So that's the downside.
How does biodiesel affect the environment, you know, in terms of the air? This is a big issue, especially in the inner cities here, New York, Philly, you know, Pittsburgh, et cetera. If we replaced every car today, suddenly, boom, somehow miraculously, we miracled every car into a biodiesel kind of an engine or whatever, what would happen to the air around here?
Well, you'd get two effects. First of all, you'd use half as much fuel because diesel engines get approximately twice the gas mileage that gasoline engine gets. So my Volkswagen Golf gets about 50 miles per gallon, whereas the gasoline one only gets about 25. So the addition to that is that your smog would go down considerably, because biodiesel has 50% less smog-producing compounds than regular fuel.
Amazing stuff. Now, how did Willie Nelson get involved in this? Did he drive up to you in his tour bus and go, check the oil, dollar gas, and change the engine?
No. Actually, what happened was Neil Young, one of the sort of granola hippie guys on Neil Young's farm, got a hold of my book, which was really popular in the organic movement. Neil read it, talked to Willie about it. Willie's wife really liked it. She said, I'm going to do it. Willie said, okay, you try it. She got a car, started running it, loved it, convinced Willie to do it, and now he's doing it.
Amazing. And how much does it cost to transfer a tour bus that carries 12 people and all of the home entertainment center and everything? I call them disco submarines. These are pretty impressive vehicles. How much does it cost to change a vehicle like that over to what you're talking about?
Here's the amazing thing, Dave. Biodiesel doesn't require any engine modifications.
Well, how does that work?
So basically, any diesel engine in America, you can pour this stuff into it 100%.
Really? Just any engine at all? You don't have to change structure or any kind of plumbing at all?
That's correct. It has to be a diesel engine.
Ah, okay. Well, this is making perfect sense. I'm talking to Josh Tickle, and he's the author of the bestseller From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, and he's the fellow who took the biodiesel-powered Winnebago, drove across the country using fuel from fast food restaurants. What do you perceive next is going to happen? You have an idea here that we're starting to see now on the TV set. You're hearing it on shows like mine here. What do you predict is going to happen in the next couple of years here, Josh? Anything dramatic?
Something very dramatic, Dave.
Please.
We are dealing with a situation now where we are importing so much oil into this country, over 60% of our oil. Meanwhile, you look at where it's coming from, the Middle East, Saudi Arabia in particular, big exporter of oil. In the next 5 years, we are going to see a huge hiccup in the oil market, and it's going to reverberate around the world. So all of this excitement that you're seeing, you know, George Bush coming out saying we're addicted to oil, these are not political plays. These are economic plays. People are very, very concerned about the economic stability of the United States in the face of a genuine oil crisis.
Oh, I'm absolutely on the side of that kind of a thinking. Every time we discuss Iraq or what's going on in the Mid-East, I'm utterly convinced that the whole issue here is not about weapons of mass destruction. It's not about spreading democracy. Did I even say that right? Democracy. It's about the oil station that's right next to the country right there. That is our gas station, whether it's Kuwait or Arabia or Yemen or Syria or whatever it is, that is the gas station that America routinely resorts to. And every time we get somebody on the air who says, no, we shouldn't be there, we should step away from the gas, I say, every virtual thing you're wearing, from your hat down to your socks to your wedding ring, is fuel implicated. And I'm wondering if we're not in the Mideast there specifically because of the gas station. What do you think?
Well, let me put it to you this way, Dave. If Iraq grew broccoli and Saudi Arabia grew lettuce, I don't think we'd be there.
I'm in agreement. What about changes for cars that use fossil fuels? Are they just to be discarded, or is there a way to modify that?
Well, we've got many fuels. Biodiesel is one of them. We discuss them all in the book. And what you find reading through this is it's very simple. You've got solar, wind, electricity. You've got biomass, geothermal, wave energy. You've got biodiesel. You've got ethanol. You've got other synthetic fuels that can be made from crops. You know, Henry Ford actually made a car out of soybeans.
What do you mean he made the car? He actually formatted the body and the seating and everything else out of complete soybeans, some kind of a cellulose material?
Yep, physically made the car from soybeans, and it was the advanced form of carbon fiber we use today. But instead of using petroleum products for the carbon fiber, he based it on soybeans.
And what happened to that idea? That just got discarded like the fella Mr. Diesel or whatever? The idea wound up in the river as well?
Yeah, it's amazing. The car, you know, there's 3 pages in the patent license for the car. One of the pages is missing. You know, you go through this stuff and you find there were geniuses who were Rudolf Diesel, Edison, Ford, people like this had actually designed our society to run substantially on its own fuel.
Question, can you run an airplane on this?
Absolutely. We actually tested an airplane in Sacramento, California, running on biodiesel.
Okay, you left out the result. What happened? You always got to ask the result in aviation. I know you went up. What happened after that?
Landed, ran fine.
And this is and was this a propeller-driven piston engine, or is this a jet engine?
That one's a prop engine, but they've done tests on jet engines at Baylor University in Texas with no problem.
So you can run a turbine jet engine off of this kind of biodiesel material?
Yeah, biodiesel is very chemically similar to diesel fuel, which is essentially what they're using in those turbine engines. So, you know, if you can run a diesel on it, you can run biodiesel in that same thing.
That's an amazing story. Wow. And you say you drive these automobiles routinely? Your family drives these automobiles routinely?
Every day.
Is there anywhere that I can go to buy a car like this that already exists, that doesn't have to be wrenched together?
Absolutely. We have on our website, biodieselamerica.org, we have listings of cars around the country. There's actually Google clickable maps where you can go in and find the cars that are for sale around the country.
And are these cars come in all models, correct? This is every model that's available as long as it has a diesel construct to begin with, correct?
A diesel engine. Yeah, the U.S. has had a real stigma against diesel since the 80s because they were clunkers. The ones we made in the 80s were loud and noisy and smoky. But the new ones that are coming in from Europe and Japan are fast, they're clean. I mean, these cars are fun to drive. I drive my car like a bat out of hell.
And the stereo sounds the same?
6-speaker subwoofer, the whole deal.
I am so in. This is amazing, amazing ideas here. What other celebs are involved with this? Who, for example, that we might know besides Willie is driving one of these? Anybody yet?
Well, this weekend we were hanging out with Luke Perry, Daryl Hannah, Willie Nelson. You mentioned Willie. Woody's got a tour bus. Woody Harrelson on biodiesel. We're seeing people.
I got news for you. Woody's not running his on simple biodiesel from fried chicken. He's burning hemp. No, these are famous names. This is amazing, great stuff.
You'd actually be surprised. Woody did burn his bus on hemp biodiesel.
I was not joking. Anyway, even though I laugh, that's serious. This is great news. And I told you you would hear it here first time on Roth Radio here. I'm talking to Josh Tickle, and he is the author of Biodiesel America. What can you leave us with before we go ahead and head off into the great stratosphere here? Any hope for the future? Any words for the future? Or what do you think is really going to transpire next? Or what should we do to make it transpire? Go ahead, Josh.
What I can say, Dave, is America is poised to be an incredibly powerful source of energy. Our farmlands are poised to be the next Saudi Arabia. We're going to move from getting fuel from the Mideast to the Midwest, where we should be getting it.
We're going to have to learn to stop not, excuse me, we're going to have to learn that we're not stopping for gas, but rather that it's time to feed the car, correct?
That's it.
Thanks so much. My special guest, Josh Tickle, author of the Biodiesel America. We've been talking about the new alternatives here. Josh, you got to call us back anytime you got something new you want to rattle in front of the public large. Please, will you?
I will keep in touch with you, Dave. And meanwhile, people can see the updates on the website, biodieselamerica.org.
Biodieselamerica.org. Thank you so much. Over and out, baby. Yeah, sweet.
ただいま、 David Lee Roth とつながっています。 小さな火のかかしはいかが? You are tuned directly to David Lee Roth. How about Little Fire Scarecrow?
Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. If you got a thought here, because I got a very special guest. His name is Billy Altman. Billy's a longtime music journalist who's worked with many, many, many publications, only the best ones, too. New York Times, New Yorker, Rolling Stone, Esquire, GQ, Details, The Voice. Oh, the list is long, and it's going to continue on for a long time. From 1993 to 95, he was the assistant curator for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. Hello, Cleveland. I know you're listening. Ooh, this is a fellow with an idea. He's going to talk about the Grammys with us here. Ladies and gentlemen, my special guest, Mr. Billy Altman. Billy, are you there?
Good, David. How are you?
Extraordinary this morning. Thanks for joining us so early. Did you wake up or stay up?
I woke up.
What did you think of the Grammys last night, Billy? Please illuminate, reacquaint us. Go ahead.
I thought, you know, you want shows to begin well and end well. So I thought, at least on that level, considering that it was a 3.5-hour show, I thought, you know, it started off with a bang, obviously, with Madonna. And I thought it ended really nicely with Alan Toussaint and all the New Orleans people and the tribute to Wilson Pickett. So, you know, in between... things kind of, you know, came and went, but I thought at least it started and ended well.
Okay, do you think Madonna has got a focus, or are we seeing a performance here that's a little bit distracted? Because to me, being a huge Madonna fan, going all the way back to the very beginning and so forth, and I bought the last record, I bought most of the Madonna records, Madonna looked like somebody's mom imitating Madonna to me. Speak to that.
Well, I think, you know, she went back on this album to do real old school and to get back on the dance floor. So I think that she just wanted to show that she could still bring it the way she used to bring it. And I thought on that level, I thought she was fine.
See, but I bought the record, and I went back expecting to hear her going back to the old school. And all she did was sample some late 70s disco stuff from the Warehouse playlist and put it into what's completely modern using all the modern machines of production or whatever. Agree or disagree?
I would agree, but I think that that's okay. I think that, you know, I think she was just trying to recreate where she originally came from on that album. And I thought that in that respect, I thought the record was very successful.
I understand that there was an amazing production that accompanied her program or her performance there, involving all the video screens and so forth. I didn't see that on the TV. Did you pick up on any of that?
Well, no, I just saw what all of us saw at home, which was just the, you know, the animated stuff with the gorillas. So I don't know if there was anything extra. I mean, you know, these telecasts get very difficult because, you know, I'm not sure even how many people are aware that any time they would do a live performance, you know, they would just fill that open space there with a couple of hundred people just raising their arms and everything. And then, you know, the whole audience at the Staples Center is just behind all of that.
Sure.
So in terms of what we see and what actually goes on, all of that is, you know, there's great discrepancies there.
How about Coldplay? If we already have U2, why Coldplay?
Well, good. Well, I think, as you know, if you're gonna go run out in the audience, you should do something. I mean, just, you know, he ran out into the audience and then he ran back, and there really wasn't much going on there. And
well, it distracted from his plagiarism. Everything that I saw was him imitating the singing, imitating the vocal tone, imitating the guitar moves, imitating the bass line, including the stage mechanics. And he runs the way that Bono does. Agree or disagree?
I would agree.
Okay. Well, we'll call it Bono Light. What about Sly? Are you a Sly Stone fan?
I thought, in terms of the entire, because they try and keep these things as scripted as they can, but then something weird always happens. And of course, we didn't have anything quite on the level of, let's say, the soy bomb guy from years ago. But I thought that,
a streaker
running up to accept an award that he hadn't gotten. But I thought that the Sly tribute was wonderfully chaotic, and I thought at least on that level, I thought that was about as close to some real rock and roll as we had all night, because it just was a mess from beginning to end. And Sly, God bless him, he just looked like an escapee from, you know, from Mad Max Thunderdome, with the mohawk and everything.
The Ayatollah of rock and roll. Well, let me speak to the chaos element. Then it was perfectly representative of the concert at Woodstock. The fences fell apart. The bands didn't know where the backstage was. And I was explaining to the fans here that Sly walked out there. Of course, everybody had was dubious about whether or not he's even going to make his Axl Rose appearance or whatever. And when he showed up, to my ear, he had the world's most amazing backup band. It was not a backup band. Virtually everybody singing there is a frontline vocalist. Yeah. All the instrumentalists are heavyweights dealing with heavy pro class lifting in terms of music. And he walked out and forgot to sing the verse. This is a two-part song. Argue with me. Is this not the world's most famous one-chord song? Sly, learn the chord. At least be able to go boom-shaka-laka-laka, boom-shaka-laka.
I was also trying to figure out if he had a cast on one of his hands, because it looked like he almost had a cast on one hand. I don't know if it was just like a, you know, partial glove or whatever, but he was barely playing. I mean, it was almost kind of a Brian Wilson moment there.
It's an Elvis thing. Just tap the damn thing and go boom-shaka-laka, boom-shaka-laka. And everybody was looking at each other, you know, with that look like you don't want anybody to know that you're looking.
Well, after what I think it was Sierra that was out there doing Everyday People, and she couldn't even remember the words. So I thought that, you know, she couldn't get her all the colors right.
Yeah, she couldn't remember where the Pilates studio was either. Okay. Yeah, the squeakiest wheel shouldn't get all the grease. Also, right. What did you think when Bono was playing with Mary J? What was your take on that?
I thought she was really trying much too hard, and I thought I think she felt compelled to maybe try too hard, and I think she was, and that's how that came off. But, you know, a lot of these combos, what Linkin Park was calling the mashups on these shows, a lot of times just, I mean, I thought the Christina Aguilera, Herbie Hancock was just very strange, because they were just doing two different songs.
Okay, well, she doesn't have any kind of bias towards that kind of music at all. She probably only knows Herbie from the, that video with the robots and whatnot, whatever the title of it.
And she's a terrific singer, but I just thought that, and of course she looked better, certainly, than doing Lady Marmalade in her, you know, little...
Go ahead, you.
I was just going to say that, you know, a lot of these kind of combos get very strange. Although I loved when McCartney came out to start to do Yesterday, and he's singing Yesterday, and Jay-Z's going, uh-huh.
Yeah.
All my troubles seem too far away. That's right. I mean, I thought that was really cool.
I thought it was extraordinary, especially when the kid who sings with Linkin Park harmonized. That's not easy stuff to do, much less to stand next to a Beatle and do it. Trying to do those weird fifth harmonies or whatever that established the Beatles and stuff is heavy lifting. And he banged it right away.
And talent. Jay-Z was very cool in the middle of all of this. He didn't need to be as out front as maybe some of these other guys tend to be in these situations, which I thought was was very, and I don't know if it was lost on people that he was wearing a John Lennon T-shirt.
Ah, there you go. I'm with you. I'm talking to Billy Altman, longtime music journalist. He's been in many different publications, New York Times, New Yorker, Rolling Stone, all of the greats, and we're talking about the Grammys here. What did you think of Bruce Springsteen? One guitar, one voice, talk.
Well, the great thing I thought about that is the fact that, you know, Bruce won, one Grammy for rock vocal performance for that very song.
I don't know that that's a rock vocal performance. It's cinematic. He actually becomes the character. It's not Bruce.
But you know what I'm getting at here is that the categories that these things get entered in can be so bizarre because, you know, Neil Young was nominated for Best Rock Album for his album Prairie Wind, which is a completely acoustic album. And so there was Bruce, you know, doing, you know, basically doing a folk song pretty much, and then there, you know, but he had won for best rock vocal performance.
Well, I've maintained steadfastly that there are two things in life that are identical from the time that they're born until the time that they die. One of them is a sea anemone. When it's born, it looks identical, and then it grows out its life and it dies in old age and it looks identically the same. The other thing is Neil Young. How can you possibly tell what he's doing now any different than what was before? It was always great then. It's still great, and I guess probably with people like Springsteen, who really have maintained a signature style and a signature sound throughout their career, that finally you just got to give them an award, agree or disagree.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about Neil Young or you're talking about Bruce?
Well, they're kind of two peas in the same pod. They have
Neil,
a very...
You know that Neil Young has never won a Grammy.
Oh, I was not aware of that. But Sheryl Crow has won 15.
But, you know, this is stuff historically that gets very strange. I mean, total number of Grammys won by the Rolling Stones.
How many?
One.
And how many did Mariah Carey win in her career so far? Do you have any?
That's a whole other thing. But I mean, since her rookie year, I mean, since when she was voted Best New Artist, which was in 1990, last night was the first Grammy she'd won since then. So you're talking 15 years, and she was the most successful female artist of the entire 1990s. She had, a chart-topping record every year of the 90s. And yet, to many people, obviously, last night looked somewhat, you know, as a diss, you know, to her as well. Although I should point out that, you know, they give out 108 total Grammys.
Yeah, and a lot.
Only 11 of them were given out during the program last night. So if the chips fall where they may, there was U2 getting 3 out of the 11 that they gave out.
Okay, see, I get you. So there's a little politic involved.
Oh, there's so much politics involved because, like I said, you know, Mariah won 3 Grammys, and yet everybody this morning is talking about, you know, what, you know, that this was a big disappointment,
yeah,
a big failure.
What about Kelly Clarkson? Hit or miss?
Well, I like the fact that you thanked Jesus and God and everyone in her acceptance speech. And I like that she was like gesturing with her purse, which was really nice too. You know, she's okay. Look, she's a nice singer. She looked a little bit like a deer in the headlights, but then she kind of always does to me somewhat. But look, Since You've Been Gone is a great song, and as you know, a great song is a great song is a great song. So
if I was
no particular problem, you know. Plus, I think they really felt that they needed to have one of these American Idol people win something to kind of justify the fact that all of America keeps watching this silly show.
Yeah, but as a world-class strength and training coach, I would have chosen Fantasia. Let me take her on as an apprentice. I can win with this one.
Well, she's certainly more excited, which I think is great, too. You want people that are excited on all levels.
So. Boulevard of Broken Dreams. What do you think about Green Day? Good, bad,
well,
in the middle?
I think they're a great band, and they've really grown a lot. So I have certainly no problem. And you know, American Idiot, you know, already won stuff from last year, as they very graciously pointed out. So, and I like the fact that he had a little less kind of eye makeup on.
Does this qualify as development?
They've gotten a little more serious over the years. So I think the fact that Billy chose the eye makeup has gone a little less over the years, certainly.
Kanye West. What about Kanye and his homeboy there, Jamie Foxx, and so forth? When Jamie Foxx imitates Ray Charles, and then they sample that into a song, and then they take that sample and put it into another, is that a sample of a sample?
Well, I think the life lesson or the instruction manual that Jamie Foxx should be looking at is Eddie Murphy. I mean, you don't want to get too, you know, depends how much he wants to get into this. I mean, if he really wants to think he's going to pursue a music career, you know, look at Bruce Willis.
He has an exalted view of himself. And when I listen to Kanye West, I think of a condom advertisement. Thousands of tiny little notes urging me to let go with music so thin, I feel like I'm hearing nothing at all.
Well, you know, the great line you hear about you know, listening to rap music. I always remember seeing a comedian who was talking about, someone asked him whether he listened to rap. He was a white guy, and he said, "I listen to rap and hip hop occasionally, mostly at intersections."
I've been talking to Billy Altman, my favorite music journalist. He's been writer for the New York Times, the New Yorker, Rolling Stone, Esquire, all of the greats. Got any thoughts for the future before we go here? Billy?
I think it's always optimistic to see how much great music there is out there. And even the one thing you come away from a show like last night is that no matter how dark it seems before the dawn, there's always new kids coming up. There's always people who are interested. There's always people who are excited and hopefully have something to say.
Have hope and faith. And it turns out that hope and faith is more than just a couple of strippers I used to date from Albuquerque, huh? These are allegations, Billy. Billy Altman, thanks for giving us a call. God bless. Well, have a great day, Billy.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.
ただいま、David Lee Roth とつながっています。小さな日のかかしはいかが? You are tuned directly to David Lee Roth. How about Little Fire Scarecrow?
Is she singing with tape? There's three voices. Listen. Two voices. Listen. She's singing along with her own voice. Did you hear it? Let it go for a second there, Hutch. I want to hear the voice again. I want to hear it. Hold on. At any rate. Roth Radio, we're reviewing the Grammys here. I hear three voices there. Somebody is singing along with tape. That's okay. If it sounds good, it is good. But cards on the table, baby. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. We just had Billy Altman, one of my favorite musical journalists, on. We were talking about the Grammys here. Also, Dan Aquilanti coming up from it's not page 6, but it's the New York Post. And he agrees, never before in Grammy history has the Recording Academy been smart enough to place its emphasis on performance, but it did last night. So much so that it didn't seem to matter who was the big winner. I agree with him. I think last night, you know, the day before, we caught a lot of flack for, you know, critiquing all the songs. Flash critics, that's what I call it. You don't give the stuff a time to breathe, okay? Just listen to it, see if you get a little Big Bang Theory. I expected a lot of storm and heat coming from fans. You know, we all take this personal in terms of the music. What I didn't expect was that the program directors of the stations that you're listening to now all called in and tried to censor me. The people who called in from classic rock said, you can't make fun of Springsteen like that. You can't make fun of Neil Young. You can't make fun of like that. And they tried to get the producers and directors behind the scenes to make me stop. A little censorship in the name of a commercial interest? Interesting, especially during Grammys. Grammys is the single most important element of free expression, free speech. You remember that amendment? Interesting. Also, for all of you who are listening to the alternative stations and so forth, who are playing the downtown rock, the stuff that I listen to when I'm downtown, same thing. The fans called in Wade one night or the other, but the program directors or whatever they are called up and said, you can't say that about alternative. You can't criticize Coldplay, you too. You can't criticize this and that. And they tried to invoke censorship in the name of a commercial interest. I defy you, brother. Talking about music is almost more fun than actually listening to it. So listen to this, baby. Yeah.
Play it, Brian. Go ahead, man. Shape. Play it, baby.
What do you think? Should I shut up? Come on, no, let's fight. Let's dust it up here.
I think let's fight with them, Dave.
I love
dust it up because you've been holding back. They don't know the real Dave like we know.
I've been going politically correct here to some degree here, you know, but in terms of arguing about music, that's the great way to get rid of a lot of beer, isn't it? Yeah. Spinning, grinning, critiquing. I talk to the TV set, and I rarely say nice things just like you don't. I really talk to the radio when I'm in my car and I don't like something. I say something to the radio and I don't expect an answer, just like all of you listening to me now. You're reaching for the dial. Stop it. Roth Radio. Somebody's defending Christina up here. He's calling in from Boston. Hutch, Roth Radio. You in the spotlight, Holmes. Go.
What's up, Dave?
You're on, friend. Go ahead.
All right, man. I just wanted to defend Christina a little bit because you seemed like a little tough on her.
Why? Because, wait a minute, you think I'm tough because I played a mashup of Jump utilizing her song and playing both verses and both choruses and completely ruined my relationship with every classic rock program director out there? You think I don't like Christina Aguilera? Put up the music here, man. I love her, baby.
Yeah, you're putting words in my mouth. No. I'm just saying that you said that thing was kind of little. You can make fun of anyone you want, man. It's all good. But the thing is that, you know, she basically went up there and sang a tune. And Herbie reharmed the hell out of the damn thing underneath her. So you could put Bonnie Raitt up there or whoever, Ray Charles for that matter, someone who really can sing a melody. And you're not going to really get someone that's going to sound good with a piano player that's playing that busy and that harmonically free underneath them.
That's a really good point here. We have that loop here. Thanks for calling. We're going to play that music and examine what he's talking about. Go ahead, Hutch, spin it up there one time.
So many places.
This is Christina and Herbie, right?
I've sung a lot of songs, made some bad.
He's right. He's misguiding her with the piano. Listen.
I've acted out my life in stages with 10,000 people watching.
Stop it, Herbie.
We're alone now, and I'm singing a song for you.
Okay, see what's happening. Wait, I can tell you exactly what's happening there. They're competing. Herbie is using all passing notes. He's not hitting the bases.
He's keeping all the bluesy notes.
Yeah, and you can't find the bass. Okay, maybe if you practiced with him
It's like the first time I tried to play over this loop.
No, you can't do it. It's deceptively simple, but he's using what's called passing notes. All of that do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do when he should hit the chord and let her get her foot on bass there. I totally agree with what homeboy on the phone call previous just said. Herbie, wake up, man. You suffer from the fool's disease. You think too much. Roth Radio, New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach. It's all within reach here. Who wants to talk about Springsteen? Hook him up here from Philly one time. What'd you think of the Springsteen show, Bubba? Roth Radio, you're in.
Hey, it's Laz here from Philly. How you doing, David?
Go ahead, dude. Turn him up there, Hutch.
Let me tell you, I don't understand the whole Springsteen phenomena. You know, I saw him a couple times, and I was always excited to see something else. I went up to Toronto, bunch of friends in Springsteen. I mean, you know, this guy just bores the crap out of me. Pet Shop Boys are playing, you know, something else is playing. We're talking early 80s. You know, I'm old. I got three tickets to go see Springsteen at the Royal Albert Hall in London. You've probably been there. Posh place and stuff. I go in there after work. It's the Ghost of Tom Joe tour. The guy put me to sleep. I'm in the front row, expensive tickets that someone gave me. I walk out of the show and Springsteen says, really, I guess somebody don't like this music. and I got booed, you know. And then the guys up there last night, it's the same exact thing. Who likes this guy?
Well, he obviously speaks to somebody in terms of his tone. Obviously, he's representing some specific neighborhoods. What neighborhood do you think that Bruce Springsteen currently represents?
I don't know. Boring America, maybe. Boring America, you know. So it's great seeing Green Day get up there, you know, rocking and driving and stuff. Great to see Paul McCartney. He can come with the times and keep that excitement in the music and stuff, no matter what he does. But I just don't get some of these artists. You know, I'm a product of your generation, 1984, Jump, and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, you know, certainly so is Bruce Springsteen. And I guess what you're saying is you went to see the ghost of Tom Joad and you saw the ghost of Bruce Springsteen, huh?
Yeah, you see him all the time, you know?
Well, at least even if it's not a favorite record, it's a brand new Frisbee. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. We're DavidLeeRoth.com, and we stream 24/7. If you missed the show initially, it's like TiVo, baby. You can find me anywhere. And we're broadcasting. I'm getting emails from Milford, Mass., Glasgow, Scotland. Island Heights, New Jersey, Bolivia, South America, Boise, Idaho, from Rio to Roanoke, baby. Diamond Dave, David Lee Roth, no joke.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.